I'm Bill Littlefield. Back in 2013, cheerleaders for Washington's NFL team took a trip to Costa Rica to take photographs for the squad's swimsuit calendar, and now some of those women are saying the trip made them very uncomfortable and they felt unsafe. That's where we're going to begin on this week's Three Stories You Should Know. I'm joined by sports writer and editor Patrick Ruby via Skype and by WBUR Shira Springer. Welcome to both of you.
Great to be back.
Great to be here.
In a New York Times article this week, Juliette McCour tells the story of that trip to Costa Rica back in 2013. The cheerleaders were at times asked to pose topless, and high-rolling guests of the team were invited to watch that photo shoot. Some of the cheerleaders have said that after the shoot, they were directed to accompany some of the high rollers to a nightclub, the high rollers having picked them out. The supervisor of the squad maintains the cheerleaders were, quote, invited rather than directed. This story is a lot more detailed than a lot of the stories we've heard in the past, but in one sense, it's simply more the same thing. NFL cheerleaders are objectified, underpaid, subject to ridiculous, insulting, and arbitrary rules regarding behavior and their diets. Some of these cheerleaders on the Costa Rica trip have reported that they felt, and I'm using their words now, pimped out. Have we got finally enough reasons to eliminate the phenomenon of NFL cheerleaders?
Yes, I think we have reached the tipping point. I think we actually reached the tipping point years ago. If this doesn't send a signal to the league, to teams, that cheerleading has to go, that it's simply not a safe environment for these women, that they are being exploited in addition to being degraded, then I don't know what will. Unfortunately, in the article, the New York Times article that you mention, one of the cheerleaders said that she doesn't think it will reach the breaking point until something absolutely horrible happens, mm-hmm. a rape or a sexual assault.
Patrick, do you go along with this, or are you going to stand up for cheerleaders?
So hear me out here. I have a crazy proposition.
Uh-oh.
We could get rid of cheerleading. And yes, it's corny and it's retrograde. It's exploitative, and everything, the way the NFL handles it, is reportedly terrible. But now this is crazy. We could also just treat cheerleaders like other employees, like valuable marketing employees. Like, we could treat them like assets instead of commodities, and we could treat them professionally. I know that's crazy for an NFL team to do, but you could actually not put them in dangerous positions. You could actually pay them reasonable wages. You could actually have proper security. You could actually even do something corny like a swimsuit calendar, but do it in a professional manner. Cheerleaders could actually be an incredible forward-facing asset marketing tool for a professional sports team. It doesn't have to be this bad, but they choose to make it this bad.
I like what Patrick is saying, but I feel we're well past sort of the three strikes with it. This has been going on for decades and decades. What is it? The horse is out of the barn with this kind
of stuff. Reform is unlikely at this point.
Exactly. I don't think the NFL is the type of organization where you can safely do all the things that Patrick is suggesting.
Unfortunately, you're probably right. You know, my proposal was theoretical, but in reality, trusting the NFL to be able to execute it probably
yes.
won't happen. Look, they have enough problems treating their own players like regular employees.
Shira, your story involves two allegations. One is doping, and the other is extortion. And I'm going to leave it to you to explain how this all works.
Oh, man, Bill. So let's go to Kenya and hear about the positive drug test of Asbel Kiprop. If you don't know him, he is the most dominant 1,500-meter runner of the last decade. He has an Olympic gold medal, 3 world championships. And he recently tested positive for EPO, a banned blood booster. But that's not where the real story is. He claims he was extorted. Apparently, 2 drug testing officials arrived at his home in Kenya and wanted money for a clean test. Kiprop went, apparently, to pay them. He didn't pay them enough money, and he says they tainted his sample and he tested positive. I don't know whether to believe Kiprop, but it's certainly believable. Things like this happen when it comes to doping all the time. I think the whole testing mechanism is not above board. Is there any hope? Is there any hope for clean sport if this is where we are? I mean, and this comes on top of Russia and other countries having similar issues with corruption in their anti-doping apparatus.
Patrick, can you hold out to Shira the possibility that there may be some hope?
No, I cannot.
Oh, dear.
Unfortunately, you know, anti-doping is a longstanding systemic failure. It just doesn't work. Look, I'm very sympathetic to athletes who don't want to dope and yet want to be able to compete at the elite levels. I feel bad for them. But unfortunately, the way the system is, the incentives are to dope because we want superhuman performances and we reward that. And so as long as that's the case, people are going to be doping. And basically, it's like alcohol prohibition. You essentially create a crime problem. You create the conditions for extortion and for state-sponsored extortion like we saw in Russia. And I think we could have a better and safer and saner system if we took off these prohibitions and instead sort of had actual, legitimate, non-quacky doctors come in and monitor these athletes for health concerns and sort of try to have more controlled doping instead of the underground wild, wild west system we currently have.
Another question occurs. How easy is it to taint somebody's sample with EPO? Do you go to a pharmacy and say, I'd like some EPO, please, and then just pour it into the sample? I don't know about that. There have been so many instances of doping in track and field, men, women from all countries, the U.S. included, that somebody who says, no, no, I didn't really do it, nobody's going to believe them because this is the way life works in this sport and it has been for such a long time. This particular story has so many elements with the doping, the extortion, the charges, the countercharges. I see a made-for-TV movie any day now, Shira.
Yeah, made-for-TV movie, or you really hope that the governing body of track and field and other sports bodies come down really hard on Kenya, and that's the outcome. I mean, I'd like the movie, but I'd really like to see people go after Kenya, because let's not forget, this has been the dominant country, you know, for a long time in distance and middle distance running, and I just feel that it you further contaminate this sport, and you end up in a place like cycling, perhaps, or maybe they're already there.
Patrick, I understand that at least one politician north of the border is unhappy with us and with the way hockey is presented.
That's right. Forget about the Korean Peninsula. We've got a flashpoint in international relations here between the United States and Canada, and it involves the National Hockey League. Uh-oh. So earlier this week, Canadian Senator David Adams Richards gave an official speech to his parliamentary colleagues about the rising unaddressed menace of American announcers injecting too many American-sounding phrases into Mother Canada's favorite game that isn't curling. So hockey.
Long ago and far away, when I was a boy, we wore hockey sweaters, not hockey jerseys.
Locker rooms instead of dressing rooms. Half walls instead of boards.
Shameful. Shameful.
We didn't delay at the blue line. We stopped at the blue line. Nor did we take a wrist there. What an insulting word. We took a wrist shot. Nor did we take a slapper. What an insulting word. We took a slap shot.
Do you feel the hot maple syrup bleeding from your ears?
I think they don't have enough problems in Canada, so they have to come up with something like this.
Yes, that is exactly what this is, inventing a conflict.
Yeah. I await the backlash, Patrick. We're going to hear from hockey fans who really love the creative language, I'm sure. And if any American announcer ever referred to what the hockey players wear over their pads as a sweater and not a jersey, I would turn off the broadcast because, no, it's not a sweater. It was a sweater 80 years ago in Montreal, and it's not a sweater anymore anywhere in the United States. It's a jersey.
That is true.
Look, half walls is pretty stupid sounding.
And I've never heard anybody say that. That's like a made-up phrase.
Everybody says boards. Yeah. We said boards in peewee hockey in northern New Jersey
That's
50 years
phrase.
Ago.
here's my issue with this, by the way. There are 31 NHL teams, 7 in Canada, 24 in the U.S. So you know the old saying, if you owe the bank $1 million, they own you? Mm, but if you owe the bank $100 million, you own the bank? Canada, we pretty much own the NHL.
Oh, man, I wish you hadn't said that. The letters, oh, no, the emails, oh, no. Oh, no, hey.
Forward them to Patrick.
Honestly, Canada, like, I love you guys. Appreciate your concern. You're upset about cultural reappropriation. That's what happens when things cross borders. If you don't like it, don't take our money. And maybe see if your politicians are willing to build a half wall. By the way, the best story in hockey this year is a team in Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, yes.
Yeah. How Canadian is that? I mean, I don't know if this is true, but I'm pretty sure if you score a goal, like nickels start pouring off the scoreboard. So I think Canada does need to find other things to worry about.
My guests for this week's Three Stories You Should Know have been sports writer and editor Patrick Ruby and WBUR Shira Springer, who also writes for the Boston Globe. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Bill.